Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you create unpredictable workshop experiences that predictably work. We've had some epic interviews the last few weeks. Wow, so much to listen to reflect on. And I'm also finding it's a bit self-indulgent of me, but re-listening back to some of these interviews, because when you're in the moment interviewing someone, you pick up all these tips and you're kind of reeling and also responding, that it's not when you actually can listen back, reflect on what they're actually saying, that it becomes real. So if you haven't listened to those episodes, I suggest you tune in. Now, this week's episode was actually inspired by a question that came through on the Flipchart community on Facebook. It's a free community if you're not in there. And the question was this. It's from Ishan Chan. She has a wonderful podcast called Talent Stack. I was a guest on one of her podcast episodes. I'll pop a link to that in the show notes for this episode. And Ishan asked on the Flipchart, "Hi Leanne, is there a short podcast episode, less than 20 minutes, that I can share with my workplace on why we need to think differently about how Zoom show and tell sessions are run? I want to share this with people who have the mindset that they just want to tell their story about the awesome features they delivered. The target audience would be about 20 or 30 peers via Zoom." Thank you for the challenge, Ishan. I love getting questions like this that I can sort of riff on, which I'll be doing in this episode, and really focusing on Zoom as the platform and this particular challenge. So really getting specific on this. Before I jump into my response, next week's show, I've got an absolute superstar, the rock star of consulting, Alan Weiss, the author of Million Dollar Consulting, is joining us. We actually invited him on the show as part of an experiential activity with my new private community called Show Up. So there were a few of us on the call and gave the opportunity to the Show Up community to ask Alan their questions. So you'll hear that next week. It's a great episode. And that's another one I've been listening to. Like, I've just been getting the Dropbox folder, walking around that file that's already in there and thinking, gosh, what can I learn from this guy? So stay tuned for that one next week. And last week we had Yuri from The Magic Source on, and we were talking about innovation. Actually, since that conversation, we really resonated on a few topics, particularly around virtual facilitation. And what Yuri and I are both hearing is people are coming to us and going, look, we want to recreate the experience of being in a face-to-face workshop, but how can we do that virtually? It's virtually impossible. And we're here to tell you, no, it's not. It is actually virtually possible. And that's the name of our new online program we'll be bringing out. It's called Virtually Possible. And if you're curious about knowing more about it, we're still figuring out the topics we're going to deep dive on with this in this online program. But if you'd like to be on the mailing list when we do open doors, head on over to firsttimefacilitator.com/possible. We're looking at launching this in August. So that's firsttimefacilitator.com/possible. So really, we're all about how can we create the same level of engagement, the same level of fun, the same outputs in a virtual setting, and we both believe it is virtually possible. As always, if you'd like to continue the conversation when the podcast is over, join the community of over 900 facilitators from all around the world on our free Facebook group called The Flipchart. A link to that is in the show notes. Now, onto the show. Before COVID, I was hopping on planes, or lucky enough to fly around the world running workshops. Workshops took me to Sydney, Hong Kong, Singapore, Delhi, Mumbai, Paris, as well as central Queensland last year. Now this year, I've been traveling in between my living room, my lounge, my kitchen. So I've really had to turn my attention and focus on what it takes to recreate these experiences online. And I have been also thinking that this is an opportunity to try new things. On every time I hop on a webinar or a call or a training session that's run virtually, I use it as an opportunity to learn, to experiment. And if you're a member of my Show Up community, you'll see that in all the different calls that we have, I do try to use different tech. I just see this as a really big opportunity for us to, in terms of delivering online, as one big experiment. It kind of reminds me of the conversation I had with David Knorr back in episode 123. It's an easy episode number to remember, 123. And he was talking about if you're new to an organization, you get to ask like silly, obvious questions when you're the new person, right? Because you haven't been there for a while. And I'm finding it's like the same with online delivery. Yes, we're in the third or fourth month of lockdown, but I think all of us are still on this learning curve. So it is an opportunity. We can get away with trying things out and people are a little more sympathetic. Now I get this when it comes to like a professional organization or something that's really high stakes, maybe not try to experiment then. But if you're in calls with friends or with groups that you feel safe around, like I do with my show up community, I will just try different things because we are all in this together. And I think it's good for me, I guess, to role model that it's okay to try and it not working out the first time. I'm sharing that with you just to let you know that that's my philosophy on how I'm adjusting to online delivery. Also, it is really hard to keep up with everything that's changing. Companies are bringing out new pieces of tech. We're looking at third-party tools like Mural, Mentimeter, tools like that to supplement what we're doing on Zoom. Zoom also continues to update their offering, and every time that they do an upgrade, I have to sit and go through the back end and make sure that all my settings are right. But it also changes that onboarding experience. I mean, now we can do things like reactions. There's also a button in the participant panel where it says go slower or go faster. I think we were joking on a call that I can't even remember who it was. We were just joking that go faster button is like a passive aggressive thing. Like if you're on a call and someone's clicking that, it's kind of good insight into what they're thinking and feeling about your presentation. Thankfully, it hasn't come up for me yet, but I do talk fast but no one's used move slower on me yet. I also noticed Ken Bergen posted on the flip chart that Zoom are bringing in live captioning as well. So transcriptions while you're on a Zoom call. So it's all happening. It's all moving really quickly. And the only way that we can adapt to that is by adapting with it and trying things out. So let's start with the problem with what's going on. Also, Noor on that call, episode 123, he said on 128 webinars and they were mostly rubbish. So what's going on? When I spoke to Yuri last week on the show, he said something which really stood out for me. And he said, what we're seeing is what people are doing online is they're just presenting what they do in a real workshop and just slapping a webcam on top of it. And I think that's the problem. We're not really rethinking what it looks like to engage people online. So that's the problem. People are just like literally putting on slide presentations and talking to it. So there's a few things I want to address here. And the first thing, while it's not the most practical thing, is mindset. So the mindset I spoke about before, I think that's important. Having a mindset of this is a learning curve. It's going to be uncomfortable. There's going to be a few ouch moments. I won't be as sharp with breakout rooms and like clicking things really quickly, but that's okay. So having that type of mindset that it's not about perfection. I think the second mindset is if you're hopping on a webinar or a call, you're having to share something with your colleagues. Do you even care about it? Like how passionate are you about what you're sharing? And if you've been asked by your manager to share something, to showcase something, how can you get yourself caring about it? So it really comes back to purpose. And why is this important to share? Why does it drive you? Because we can really tell, I don't even know what it is. If it's, is it body language? Is it like, what is it? Is it the voice? Is it your passion for it? I find it really easy to tell if someone is interested in their own subject matter or when they're not. So that's a key mindset thing. The other thing I want you to consider is what you're sharing supposed to be shared in a live setting, in a live 20, 30 or 60 minute call? And think about this. If you are sharing it live, what is the point of sharing it live? Yuri, I keep talking about him, but he shared a video in the flip chart by Marcus John Henry Brown. Now this guy runs a YouTube channel called Tiny Talks, and he was actually going to town on live calls. He suggests that everything should be pre-recorded. I'll put the link to that video in the show notes. I won't talk all about it, but he is going towards a slant to everything should be pre-recorded because there are so many variables that can go wrong in a live setting that make it really hard and complicated. Watching that YouTube video really made me think about, yeah, what is the purpose of going live? And for me, if I'm to answer that question, the only reason that you should be going live is to have that interaction and engagement and participation from someone else. Otherwise, you could just literally use Loom, a tool like Loom, to record a voiceover of you narrating your slides and just send that to people to watch in their own time. One more mindset thing. I think there's also a misconception that it takes a lot of work to get engagement, and that is actually, it's a lie. It's a myth I want to bust. It really doesn't. You actually have to be more lazy. Like what Michael Bungay Stanier said in our interview, you've got to be more lazy to get engagement. So 60 minutes of a workshop doesn't mean that you create 60 minutes of content. That is hard work, 60 minutes of content. I would take it back a third or even half the level of content. So half the level of content because you want to get the other half of engagement, people responding, people asking questions. That is the point that they're dialing in live. And with anything that goes for 30 or 60 minutes, you really don't need to create a lot of contrast. I talk about contrast a lot on this show. It is my number one philosophy for workshop design and to live a good life, but we can talk about that sometime else. So you don't need to throw out new activities every 5 minutes. That would be a bit OTT, a bit over the top. It's not a hurricane. It's a session. It's all about how you structure it, how you sequence it. And if you throw a little engagement in there, that's a little bit of gold dust, you've just done enough. Okay, 30 or 60 minutes, you don't need to do too much in terms of contrast. So that's my bit on mindset. You got to care what you're talking about. You've got to evaluate why you're doing a live call, and you've got to be a bit more lazy. I hope that helps. Now let's look at the audience. So right now, we've always been in this battle, but we are in a battle for attention. My goal at the moment is to reduce the amount of Zoom meetings that I'm on every week. That is my goal because I'm spent like 3 months just zooming around, and it comes a point where you think, okay, I can watch this recording afterwards. I don't need to be on the call live. So it is a real battle for attention. We're not only competing with other webinars, we're competing with Netflix, we're competing with addictive apps, emails, life as well. So consider the audience requirements from this. And they're probably thinking the same thing. Like, I've got to hop on another Zoom call. And they're looking at time. And really, for this episode, I'm really just talking about short, sharp workshops in maybe like in a knowledge sharing way. It's like a training session, not a full facilitated session. So I'm really leaning on training and skill and knowledge development here. Maybe set an expectation for your audience. Will they need to have audio? Will they need to have video set up or not to participate? Tell them that beforehand. So with my show up community, when we do things, if it's structured a certain way, I'll say, hey, we'll be going out in breakout room. So I'd appreciate if you could put your video on for that. But it's not a surprise, because how awful is it when you dial into a call and you're comfortable and then they're like, oh, we need everyone on video. So give them a heads up beforehand. But it's also cool, like if you don't want them on video, that's fine as well. It actually plays into, like, that would be really nice if someone said to me, okay, we're hopping on a call, but we don't need you to participate. We'd love you to join and chat, but you won't need to be actively there. That's kind of nice as well. What that would mean to me is that I could watch that maybe on my iPad in the living room rather than sitting at my desk again. So I'm more relaxed. So set that context beforehand. No one really likes being sprung with having to get on video or hop off mute. Think about your intention and your message. And this goes back to not only virtual workshop design, but good workshop design in general. And it goes back to Covey's habit, begin with the end in mind. So a good question to reflect on is, what do you want your participants or the people joining you on your call want to think, feel, know, say, or do differently? I'll repeat that. What do you want your participants or anyone listening on the call to think, feel, know, say, or do differently? What is the purpose of you and them being together on this call? What's one thing you want them to walk away with? How do you want them to feel? Is it just raising awareness? What is that? And often the answer to that question will dictate your medium. So I think often, and this is not only an online thing, but offline as well. Often what we'll do is we have an idea, we think we know what they want, and our next move is to go and open up Google Slides or Microsoft PowerPoint and just dump our ideas in there. So I suggest you step away from that, step away from the slideshow design, grab a notepad, and think about this question. If you had no option of using slides, how would you present this information? If you were out having a coffee with someone and you were talking about this topic, how would you share it with them? You wouldn't have your slide pack with you, so how would you communicate it? That's an interesting question because it forces us outside of the default, which is going to our slides. And there's so many ways you can do this. It could be through telling a story, it could be sharing an image, it could be sharing the stats on it, talking about the problem, how the problem is impacting them, and how you've got a great solution for them. And guess what? None of those rely on a slide presentation. So think about that coffee conversation. How would you influence someone over coffee? How would you get them to pay attention? And could you bring that inspiration back into what you're doing on your Zoom call? So in terms of my structure, which I'll jump into now, this is how I would run. And this is like a basic template that I tweak on different occasions. It's become my sort of go-to structure, but I'll bring in different tech at different times. Let me quickly explain. So like I said, the context here is a 60-minute webinar or workshop. This is a training session. It's not full facilitation. So I'm sharing knowledge or sharing a skill. Now in the show up community, I've done things like I've called it a 20-20-20. We did a 20-20-20 last month where we focused on LinkedIn content creation. So what is a 20-20-20? Well, it's 20 minutes of content, which is where I share like my philosophy and things, how I write headlines, the type of posts that I put on LinkedIn. Then 20 minutes of reflection time where I put through prompts and questions that the participants can write down their answers to. And then the final 20 minutes is 20 minutes of sharing and in breakout rooms. So I ran this one. Again, it was a test, this 20-20-20 format. I did steal it from 2020 cricket. But now I'm thinking, like, because I've played around with it, I'm thinking 2010-2010 is actually better. So that's 20 minutes of content, 10 minutes of reflection, 20 minutes of breakout rooms, 10 minutes of sharing altogether. It's pretty catchy, isn't it? 2010-2010. I like it. But I only picked this up because I experimented with the 2020-20. How I started is even before people join in, I've got a waiting room that is enabled in Zoom. I will get onto the call about 15 minutes early. I will share a welcome screen along with some music. I'll create the screen in Canva. I'll use the client's brand colors or I'll use my own templates. And on that slide, it says, hey, we'll start soon. When you arrive, it says welcome. We'll start soon. And then it says, when you arrive, answer this question in chat. And so some questions are, you know, what hot drink are you drinking right now? What TV show are you binging on Netflix? That's a question that Mel Kettle loves. And I think it's a great icebreaker question. Last week, I even used this question. If you could hang out with any cartoon character in real life, who would it be? Or you could ask a question related to the content to start them thinking about the content. And you can even put the Zoom polls right on when they arrive as well. Having music playing is really fun, sets a really nice tone. Just be careful with like royalties on that. But yeah, it just sets a nice tone. So people arrive and like there's music and there's a welcome screen and they automatically they think, oh wow, this is really quite different. You can put your video on or off. Sometimes depending on how I feel, I might have it on while I engage with people in chat. Other times I'll keep it more low key and I'll be on mute and my video is off and I'm just responding to people in chat. I guess the reason I do that by starting with a question straight away, it just sets a tone of interaction and letting them know, hey, this isn't going to be a one-sided thing. This won't be a talk fest. I actually want to hear from you. Then when we're on time, so like let's just say it kicks off at 9 o'clock, I will stop sharing everything. So I will stop sharing my screen. I will stop sharing my music. And I'll just come on full camera, so it's just me talking to the camera. And I'll also, at this stage, hopefully make someone else in that room a co-host, so then they can let people in from the waiting room, so I'm not having to like talk to the camera and then go, oh, by the way, sorry, I've got to let someone in. I know that that's also difficult, balancing both, and it's probably another podcast episode, actually, how you are the facilitator and you can be the tech DJ as well. I have been doing both roles. More recently, though, I've been leaning on people to help me with that. And when I do unshare and then go, like, because it is a bit of contrast, right? Like, they're seeing this welcome screen and music, and then it goes silent, and then it's like pop, Leanne's in full frame. What I do is, to start off, I will keep on responding to what's going on in chat. It's like that small talk before a workshop, you know, reading out a few comments, responding to it, reading their names out, using their first name as well. So it's important that you tell people to rename themselves, because sometimes I join as a company and, or you just don't know who they are. Then I move into starting with the problem, the hook. So why are we there? Ramping that up, much like what Dr. JJ Peterson spoke about in our interview. Then I'll do like a quick intro about me, but not like, I really don't spend too much. In fact, sometimes I actually forget to introduce myself because I launch in a bit too quickly. Then I'll probably ask them, so I've talked about the problem, then I'll ask them to rate their awareness or something about the problem. For an example, question could be, on a scale from 1 to 10, how much does this affect you? So let's just say we're talking about remote working. The question could be, how much do you love remote working? 1 being you don't love it at all, you hate it, 10 being you wish this could go on forever, okay? And then you're doing, so that could be in chat, or you get them to annotate over a sliding scale on the screen. And then as a follow-up question could be, okay, that's what you rated yourself. So 2 follow-ups here. 1 could be, what would it take to get you 2 points higher? Or another question that I heard on Michael Bungay Stanier's show, I can't remember who he was interviewing, but the question was, okay, you rated yourself a 5. Why didn't you rate yourself anywhere? Why didn't you rate yourself lower than that? That's a really interesting question. Why didn't you rate yourself lower than that? That's a very simple thing. And like I said, it doesn't take any work from you. You're just asking a question. And moving on from that, my philosophy with online training, and I'll say the way that I run in-person workshops, is before I give them the answer, I'll get them to think about the question first. And then I will share my response. What you usually find is, if you throw the question out there, they usually answer with the content that you're going to present. So then when it comes time for you to present what your solution is, you're either like reaffirming it or providing another perspective or how that applies, but you're making it really relevant to what they responded with initially. So you're tying back their responses to the content that you prepared earlier. That's how I usually run it. And so this is what I mean by being lazy. Stop being the subject matter expert. If it is just you being the SME, just pre-record it. If you don't want any input from them, just pre-record it. But if you want a guide, if they're calling in live, just give them the opportunity to think about the question first, then reaffirm, readjust when you deliver the content that you've prepared earlier. By the way, I hope this doesn't sound like I'm giving everyone a lecture. I really don't. Yeah, I want this to be more helpful, but I'm actually picking up, wow, I'm kind of going on a rant here. So I apologize if it does sound like that. I know we're all figuring this out, but I guess I've been burnt by a few webinars and I'm bringing it all to this podcast. So apologies for that. But yeah, I mean, it's, again, if they're there live, please let them contribute. I also balance my prompts for interaction. So my prompt is usually, hey, let us know in the chat box, very directive, or if you agree with this, give us a thumbs up, use the reaction sign. You've got to be much more directive. And Jonas Arianto, in my episode with him, mentioned this as well. You've got to be much more instructive virtually. I think the easiest way to create engagement is to answer a question. We all have Google-like brains. So when someone asks us a question, we kind of want to get the solution. We can't help but consider an answer. So by throwing a question out there, you're getting them to interact without them even really wanting to. So that's why questions are great. And so sometimes in the moment when I'm delivering a session, I'll just throw a question out that I hadn't thought of. Other times I might have a dedicated slide for the question so they can hear it from me, but also read it on the screen. Or I might have a flip chart in my background and I'll flip to that question. I really don't like context switching. And that's when you're multitasking, both delivering the content and reading chat. So like every 5 to 10 minutes, I'll actually pause and really look at chat and respond there, take some time out to do that before then progressing with my content. I also love, so how I set it up is in gallery view, but when sharing your screen, you can only see like 5 faces on gallery view, which is why it's great to not share your screen occasionally, because you get to see more people and how they're engaging with your content. Something else I'll do is get them to engage with something from their own end. So I'll get people to like brainstorm an idea, grab a pen and paper, and just write down as many ideas as possible. I'll have a timer on my screen. So that's a way of engaging with the content without directly engaging with Zoom, but they're engaging with it from their, wherever they are in the world. And then you can, you know, do something like quick share back, like share what's one thing you wrote on a post-it note, come off mute. Again, it depends on the number of people there. Obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, but it seems like the more people you have in a session, the less likely someone is going to come off mute. So the smaller groups that you have, you can possibly encourage them unmuting. And in that case, you'd get them to unmute from the beginning to set that tone. Otherwise, yeah, that's a tough one to navigate. It can be kind of tricky. Also, yeah, I mentioned I have a flip chart in the background for some sessions that I run. And I can do that to keep things on track. I'll just put the agenda there. Or if I'm using a tool like Mentimeter or something like that, I'll write the code on the flip chart. But to be honest, for a session that goes for between 30 to 60 minutes, if it's a standalone event, like if I'm not part of an all-day conference, I'll just use the tools that are inbuilt into Zoom. I just find that if you go to a third-party tool within a 30 to 60 minute workshop setting, it takes a bit of time to onboard them with the tool, log in, get the access codes. And I feel like there's enough that you can do within Zoom where you don't need to use a tool like Mentimeter to create the engagement. I guess it depends on all your purpose. It goes back to purpose. But yeah, think about Zoom. There's, you know, you can use questions, a combination of chat, unmuting, reactions and polls to, plus all the tactical stuff, like I said, where people are writing on pen and paper or sharing something that you might not need to lean on a third-party tool. In terms of creating more contrast, I do use Google Slides if I am using a presentation deck. And what I'll do is I'll put in a blank slide like every so often as a reminder to switch off the deck. So every time I see a blank slide on my presentation, I will unshare and it reminds me that I'm full camera just to get that contrast in. And the good thing about virtual is that if you need prompts, like you know how you do a speech, you might have some palm cards. No one can see that. So I always have like key messages and pointers literally blue tacked on the wall behind me. And they're right near my webcam. So it looks like I'm talking into the webcam, but really I'm looking at the prompts to really remind me of what I should talk about. I've also been using a cool tool. It's called Notability for the iPad, and I'll share my iPad screen. And in Notability, I've handwritten stuff. I've included screenshots of PDFs and I've included questions in that. So the other day for the Show Up community, I had three different words and it was like Wheel of Fortune. So I put the first letter of the word and the last letter and some dashes in between. So people had to guess what the word was. And it's just so simple, but super easy. Like I said, I was just lazy. I just didn't write the whole word in. I just put a few dashes in, but it gave people a reason to interact with the content. So yeah, simple things. I mean, you can be standing and then you could sit down. You could have a flip chart in the background. You could have props in front of you, post-it notes that you put towards the camera. You can ask everyone to answer a question, put a timer on. You get them to think of a time when this happened, story, data. There's all these different ways that you can bring contrast in to make your webinars, your 60-minute meetings or training sessions much more interactive. Those are my ideas. Like I have gone, wow, Ishan asked for a 20-minute episode. I've gone a little bit over. I hope that's okay. But these are just my ideas and I'm always inspired by what I see from other people. So please, 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 if you're doing something interesting that you think, Leanne, you missed that, you should have added that, please let me know. Send me a tweet at Leanne Hughes or an Instagram DM at Leanne Hughes. Connect with me on LinkedIn. And if you're wanting to go up the learning curve of making things in your virtual workshops almost like they are a physical workshop, get on the wait list for Virtually Possible. It's a collaboration between myself and Yuri, the magic source, coming to you in August. So the website is firsttimefacilitator.com/possible. Have a fantastic week. Look forward to bringing you an interview next Monday. thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. They often say the best way to a podcaster's heart is through an iTunes review. So if you can hop onto Apple Podcasts and give this show a thumbs up, a rating and review, I would be surprised and delighted by that. Thank you so much for listening to the show. And if you think that anyone needs this tip, send them this episode, share the love with them as well. And thanks for joining the End of the Podcast Club. You made it here. Catch you next week.